And welcome to another edition of LGBT in the Ring, your rainbow bastion for all things pro wrestling. I am your host, Brian Bell, here with you once again. And we have a very fun one in store for all of y'all today here on the show. Of course, our guest this week is the Super Saber, Saraya Saber. Awesome, outstanding pro wrestler coming out of the Atlanta area down there, Nightmare Factory trained. You've seen her at Action Next Up. You've seen her at TWE in Chattanooga, Pro South, multiple other promotions across the Southeast, as well as up at Beyond Wrestling at their Wrestling Open events and at Primos Pro Wrestling out in Denver. And of course, Effie's Big Gay Brunch down in Tampa as well. Just outstanding conversation with her all about, you know, her journey in pro wrestling, which is still only like just around 2 years in, and all the things that she's accomplished so far alongside so many other outstanding queer and specifically trans and non-binary talents down in the Southeast that continue to get, you know, praise and acknowledgement as some of the people that are next up in this greater LGBTQ pro wrestling movement alongside Saraya. And it's just, I don't know, I've really enjoyed watching what she's put together so far in her young career, all of the history-making matches that she's had across the Southeast with some of those people that are in that that grouping there, and just the sheer power of her presence so far in the pro wrestling space. And so, yeah, because of all of that, been looking forward to the chance to talk with her. We finally got the chance to hear, as well as a little bit of conversation about our time in Philadelphia too, because we were both up there for Mania Week. So fun all around. And I don't think we're going to wait too long to get into that conversation here today. But I do have one bit of housekeeping that I want to touch on before we jump into the interview. Obviously, our March episode of Required Reading has been a little late, but I can now safely say that episode will be dropping as you're listening. If you're listening to this on Thursday, later today, if you're listening to this after Thursday, it's already up over on our Patreon, patreon.com/LGBTRingPod. You subscribe at the $5 tier and get all the bonus shows there. So, yeah, all of the travel and personal issues that have come up with myself and Hollis to kind of push back recording of that to mid-April. I do apologize again, but that episode where we look at Chris Gold and Ron Dupree versus J.J. Dillon and Arnold Skullin alongside Todd Haynes' beautiful, beautiful film from 1998, Velvet Goldmine. We have that one in the bag now. And it should be going up over on patreon.com/LGBTRingPod later today for all of y'all subscribers to listen. So, yeah. That being said, we do still have an April episode planned, and we do still plan to get that done for this month. I have a very fun idea for the next 3 months. That's going to, all three are going to be tied together in some way there. And I'll talk more about that as we get closer to the end of the month, maybe next week's episode of this show. I'll divulge that stuff for y'all, but head on over to the Patreon and check out that episode where we talk all about Chris Colt and a very, 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 very queer movie in Velvet Goldmine. With that being said, though, let's jump into my conversation with Saraya Saber. What's up, guys, gals, and non-binary pals? Welcome back to LGBT in the Ring, and I'm very pleased to have as my guest this week someone who made their debut on the QWI 200 this past year at number 199, someone who is fighting out of my fucking neck of the woods, and I'm fucking ecstatic for that. But not just that, though. They've been popping up all over the country, honestly, in the last like year plus, and she has been just outstanding, making history where she goes, not to mention pretty solid performances at the Big Gay Brunch, if I do say so myself. I'm allowed to have that opinion. You can't see on the video, but I have the wonderful Saraya Saber here with us today. How are you doing, Saraya?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing all right. I'm glad to have you on. I've been excited to have the chance to talk to you. You know, we just to pull back the curtain a little bit, we had this scheduled for last week as we're recording this, but unfortunately, we both went to Philadelphia. I came back feeling like dog shit. If you couldn't tell from the Big Gay Brunch episode that we did last week. And so we had to push this one back a few days. But what was interesting to me was that you were in Philadelphia also, right?
Yep,
You
I
didn't come
sure
back
was.
feeling like dog shit, at least to my knowledge.
I did. The only thing I came back feeling like dog shit from was just having to do that drive home, because it's such
Oh.
a long drive home.
Yes, I once made the drive from Atlanta to Boston, and that was just torturous at
Yeah,
times.
I mean, like when I drove up there, I went like halfway, slept a few hours at a rest stop, and then drove the rest of the way. But then Sunday, I drove the whole distance home, and so it was like 12-ish hours, and it's just
Yeah.
me. So
Oh, wow. Lord,
yeah.
I can imagine, like, just because I cause like doing that drive with people is still difficult, but doing it just by
Right.
yourself, like I don't know if that's something I would personally want to take on, but also, like, you know, if you got to do it, you got to do
Yeah, it's very boring.
it. Well, since we were both in Philadelphia, I thought like that's a good place to kind of start off our conversation here. One, I'm surprised our paths didn't cross, as I know we were both at Big Gay Brunch. But I feel like that was just a sheer mass of people that, you know,
Right.
there were a number of people that were there that I actually did not run into because of just
Yeah,
how many people were
place was
there.
slammed.
Yes. But talk to me about a bit about your experience in Philadelphia. Like what shows did you go see? Like what was that experience like for you?
Yeah, so the main reason I went up there was the Spark Joshi show. They were doing a tryout to earn a spot on the show. So I did that on Friday. And then later that evening, they did a seminar, and it was Aja Kong and Kyoko Inoue. And I did that as well. And that was super fun. Learned, all sorts of stuff. And then see, Saturday, I went to Big Gay Brunch, and then I left there and I went and did some of the touristy stuff. Like, I went to the Rocky statue and all that stuff because I'd never been to Philadelphia. And then I hopped over to New Jersey to go to Expect the Unexpected versus Dragon Gate, because I had a bunch of friends who had been basically like in that area the whole week. So I hopped over. I'm like, it'll be a good show. Plus, I get to see, some people who are from, down here in the Georgia, Alabama region that were up there. And then I left there and went to the ECW Arena for the WrestleMania Night One watch party. And that was super fun. And then Sunday morning, I got up and drove home.
So it's a quick little turnaround sort of trip for you, in a way.
Yeah, I mean, like, ideally, like, I wish I could have like been up there longer and like stayed for Sunday and like gone to more shows, or like wish I could have like attended WrestleMania in person. But one, those tickets are expensive, and two, I didn't know that I was actually going up there until Wednesday, so it wasn't
Oh.
like I had all sorts of time to prep.
I sometimes those spur of the moment trips though can be pretty fun though, not gonna
Yeah.
lie, just kind of
I mean,
like,
I enjoyed it. I
yeah.
don't regret it. It was fun.
No, what was it like kind of having like that sort of like training atmosphere with someone like Aja Kong or Kyoko Inoue?
It was really like, it was crazy, because it's, I mean, anytime that you do any sort of like training or seminar thing with like someone of like that stature, it's kind of like, how is this my life? Like, I've watched these people on TV, and now they're like giving me advice on like things that I could do better. And then even at like the tryout, earlier on in the day, we had like Mayu Iwatani was there, and Sumi Sakai was there, and it was like, this is insane. Like, how is this my life?
These are the kind of things that you just don't necessarily expect to happen, even as you're like entering the pro wrestling space in a way.
Yeah, 100%. And then like it was like I was talking about how like Mayu Iwatani's at the trial and whatnot. The next day when I went to the Rocky statue and I did the whole like run up the steps and whatnot, and like I get to the top and there's just like about 10 like different Joshi talent just like there taking pictures. And I'm like, it's okay, just don't mark out, just let them do their thing. And then so that was cool.
I can imagine for sure, like just stumbling onto all these like outstanding like Joshi talent like that can definitely be one of those moments where it's just like, okay, composure, like
Right.
keep yourself
Yeah,
inside of your body for a
and
minute.
it's like I've seen them wrestle on my computer screen and on my TV and now I'm like seeing them in person.
I'm curious because obviously you're at Big Gay Brunch. You've wrestled on Big Gay Brunch previously already,
I
and
have.
we'll talk more about that for sure, a little bit
And Big
later.
Gay Thanksgiving.
And Big Gay Thanksgiving. I kind of lump the two together. It's Big Gay Thanksgiving is like a Big Gay Brunch show, just under like
Yeah.
a little bit different banner. But what was it like for you this time around, like from the crowd perspective? Like being amongst like the
It,
thralls, so to speak.
yeah, I mean, like it's definitely different, like being in the crowd versus like being on the actual show, for sure. But it was just like being in just a anytime you're in a room full of that many people who are all just like they're just there to like celebrate queer wrestling, and it's just like this feeling of just like bliss and happiness, and it's so amazing. And I think it's different from like when you're on the show, because it's like you're so focused on like, okay, I gotta like go out there and wrestle and whatnot. But like this time I could just kind of like sit back to the side, watch all these people who are amazing, and just kind of take it all in for like the whole experience. And like as a fan of, queer wrestling, I'm like, this is just so cool.
One of the things that stuck out to me from just like, because we're on Twitter, right? Whatever. But like one of the things that really stood out for me from like seeing some of the posts around the show was like your post about watching Edith Cyril Jamie Senegal match with the Runway. Because I know in like past interviews that you've done, like you've spoken about how like Edith is one of those people that is kind of a hero to you, being a fellow trans woman that has been part of like kind of blazing this trail that we've seen in recent years for the LGBTQ community, specifically the trans community within the pro wrestling space. What was it? How special was it for you to like kind of see her live in that way in an environment like that?
Because I had already like I'd been to shows where like and seen Dark Sheik perform, and like I've like obviously did the Big Gay Brunch show that she was on, and I did a show in North Carolina that like Jamie Senegal was on, so like I've been around them, but this was like my first time being like seeing Edith Cyril perform, and like she's just another one of those people that it's like when you think of like excellent like trans wrestlers, like she's like up there on that list, and it's just amazing when you get to see these people that, I mean, it's like we were saying earlier, it's like people that like you watch and people that like you don't think you're gonna meet them because it's just like, oh, I watched them, their matches online and whatnot, but like this has that like extra step above that because it's like, yeah, I watched them. But their matches mean that much more to me because I can kind of like relate to them like as a person. And so it was just like really cool to see. And then like for them to like Jamie and Edith to be like teaming together and like having this like combined power of trans excellence. It was really cool to watch.
Yes. I loved that vision that we saw from them. Also, I loved the finishing sequence of that match too, just like two trans women just kicking two cis dudes in the balls like repeatedly. It was
It's
beautiful.
perfect,
Yes.
right?
But and I know you weren't at the clusterfuck, but like to that same point though, like coming back to the clusterfuck that night and like seeing Edith, Jamie, and Dark Sheik all together.
All together. Yeah, I saw
Like,
the clip of it, and
oh my God.
I was so sad that I wasn't there, because like I saw the clip, but at the same time it was like 2 or 3 in the morning, and
Yeah.
I was about to drive 12 hours in a couple, like soon after that. So I'm like, I know that I can't realistically like stay up for this and still make it home. But like I saw all the clips of it, and I'm like, this is just like amazing. And the fact that like they just go out there and like kick ass together, it was really cool to watch.
Yeah, I saw someone on Twitter describe them as like the Powerpuff Girls, and I can't get that out of my brain now.
That's valid. That's totally valid. Sounds like we just need like a trans version of the Powerpuff Girls now.
There you go. There you go. We have it there. We just
Right.
it's right there. Someone put that together for a merch design or something. I don't know. I feel like that would
Right.
sell. No, but
Probably.
I don't know, like I love those environments and like those moments there too, because like it speaks to how far this community has come, right? You know, especially looking at like kind of the circumstances is the right word, but that's what I'm gonna roll with for right now around like this big gay brunch, you know, with it selling out before a single talent is announced.
Right.
And you know, even going back to like the show that y'all did in Tampa as part of this like calendar year of like what felt like nonstop like big gay brunch activity going on for
Yeah.
Effie, like I don't know, like it's one of those moments where like you know I can take my work hat off for a little while, even though I'm obviously there watching stuff for work, but like I can take that off and just kind of revel in like how far this has come from like 5 years ago, right? And I know like even 5 years ago that like, you weren't even in the ring yet.
No, I wasn't
Yeah.
even considering getting in the ring yet.
What was that initial push for you to kind of enter the ring?
Well, so and like I've said this on like other interviews before. Well, I grew up a wrestling fan. Like
Mm-hmm.
I had all the action figures, all the video games. I wrestled on my trampoline with like a giant body pillow. So like I was always like a fan, but like I had never really considered doing it myself. And then I think one day, I don't remember like why I looked it up one day, but one day I just looked up like, oh, wrestling schools near me, or like, you know, whatever, like wrestling shows near me, wrestling schools near me. And I don't think like when I initially looked it up, that like Nightmare Factory as it is today was like a thing. I think it was before Cody had kind of got into it with QT and them. And I was like, oh, okay, so there's some wrestling schools near me. And then I didn't think anything about it. And then like every couple of months or so, I would just like wrestling schools near me. And I would just kind of like, it was just this like little thing in the back of my head that just kind of like was like a slow burn. And then like I got to the point where I was like thinking about it more and more and looking it up more and more. And it, you know, kind of coincided. I was watching more like types of wrestling, and I was watching like, you know, wrestling from like multiple different places, not just like only WWE. I was, you know, watching New Japan, watching AEW, watching, you know, TNA, watching, you know, indie stuff. Like I started watching more of everything, and I just kept thinking about it, kept thinking about it. I think the person I was dating at the time was just like, why don't you try it? And so I'm like, you know what? Sure, why not? Why don't I try it?
I mean, there's nothing wrong with just throwing yourself into something, right? Just say that you gave it a go, at least.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where it's like, you know, worst case scenario, if it doesn't work out, I can at least say that I tried it, and I wouldn't have that regret.
So I'm curious about like the environment of learning at the Nightmare Factory, because obviously, like when I think of Atlanta Pro Wrestling Schools, I think Nightmare Factory and I think WWA4. Those two schools, like, they have a lot in common in terms of like, you know, a very like strong leadership point there, and what feels like at least like a interesting level of like freedom given to people in terms of like learning in a way. You know, obviously there's still structure, but like, you know, we're able to like explore a bit about ourselves and figure that stuff out, you know, as evidenced by like some of the people that have come out of the Nightmare Factory alongside you. And one thing that's really been interesting to watch is like how both of those schools have had multiple queer talents come out of them that have just been like lighting it up all over the place. You know, we've had plenty of the A4 people on the show before, but you and Kid Bandit are the two main from the Nightmare Factory that have been on this show long before. And so I'm just curious to ask you, like, what was your kind of first takeaways from the Nightmare Factory, like from like learning from Cody and QT? Like, what did you did how did you feel like in that environment initially, and how did that evolve?
I mean, I have, nothing but positives to say about my time there. Everyone was great. Everyone was super professional. Cody Rhodes is amazing. Like, you see all the time the videos on, social media of him just being this like great dude and like super friendly and whatnot. And like that's 100% who he is as a person. Like he's so nice and he's so like supportive and like wants everyone to do well, even when he's, flying all around the country, doing his various duties. And then it's just like everyone there was super nice, and professional. And it was really cool to like learn from people like Cody, like QT, like Glacier, who like they've been in this business for so long and they've seen it all. They've been around everyone and they're able to like kind of impart like that their knowledge and their like takes on different things. And yeah, it was just really cool.
No, I mean, it sounds like the environment there is one that is like extremely positive, obviously. And I don't bring this up to be like, what is it really like or anything like that. But I'm just, because that's not what we do on the show. But it's just one of those things, especially considering like how we've seen like the evolution of like marginalized identities present in the pro wrestling space, to see these spaces like a wrestling school that have really evolved to, be more accepting, be more inclusive of people like that. Like, it's just an amazing thing to see. Like, to see that, like, I'd hate to just go back to just like you and Kid Bandit, because I know there are plenty of other great talents that have come out of the Nightmare Factory, but like you and Kid Bandit being like two, very vocal, very like front facing, like trans individuals who talk about that aspect of themselves, very, very candidly. Like, I feel like that's something that is like super important in this kind of age of wrestling to really have. Like, was that some was like because I know that you transitioned like years before you went into wrestling. Was
Correct.
that aspect of your identity something that you wanted to have so forward facing in pro wrestling when you started?
So I will say I want to, we say like me and Kid Bandit, but I do want to also mention Dylan McQueen
Yes.
also trained there, who they're great. We love Dylan McQueen. Other than when they're being mean to Pollo Omar at Big Gay Brunch.
Oh, you were around for that too. Oh
I was
yeah,
there for the
I
whole
forgot
I was
in the
there for the whole
match. Yeah,
show.
I was thinking like afterwards at the merch table when they got into it again. Which those two in the room together, they're gonna get into it anyway. Sorry.
But yeah, like I was pretty open like day one of training. Like I'm pretty sure it was we were doing this like contest where Cody Rhodes is like, all right, everyone like get in the ring and then get out of the ring, and then like whoever does it best gets like $20 or something. Cause it's like most of us had never like properly gone through the ropes and whatnot. And it's like, sometimes you'll try to go through the ropes the first time you like trip or like your leg gets caught or whatever. And then it was like get in the ring, And then like say like your name, where you're from, and then like a fact about you or whatever. And the fact that I said was that I was trans because like I, because like for me, like I know it's not something I can like necessarily hide because like I know my circumstances. Like I don't have like the super high voice and I'm like 6 foot tall and whatnot. So like I know like visually like people are gonna figure out. And it's so like I just go ahead, put it out there. And it was never an issue. They never, treated me like I was some sort of like oddity or anything. Like it was just that's her. She's the girl of the class because I was the only girl in Camp 7. And then like they would bring in, other girls from previous camps to train with me because they wanted me to get experience working with other girls. So it was never, an issue that I was trans while I was training there.
And but like what I guess, so I'm trying to figure out the right way to like word my question. I guess like obviously like being forward facing about that, like in like the training environment was is you know was an important thing for you. But like how did that kind of grow with like the character of Soraya Saber and incorporating that into like that for yourself?
Because like I said, like it's not something I can necessarily hide. Like I'm like I go to shows and like people know, people in the crowd know. I hear the things that they say. They're not always good things. And so I kind of figured I'm like, okay, well, if it's just gonna be a part of me because it's like I'm not ashamed that I'm trans. I've never been ashamed of it. It's just a part of my life and it's just a circumstance of me as a person. And so and I just figured like growing up in wrestling, there wasn't all this great queer representation or great trans representation, like like Billy and Chuck and the lesbians and whatnot. And it's
God,
like,
yes.
but like now, like I see people like a Kid Bandit, like a Dark Sheik, and I'm like, y'all are inspiring me to be proud and out as a trans wrestler. Like, what if, by being out, I could maybe be that for someone who someday wants to wrestle themselves?
No, and I think that's a very like virtuous kind of approach to have to it, you know. And I could also understand the aspect of like, you know, knowing yourself and like, you know, I don't necessarily always like the term, but like sort of like self-clocking yourself so that no one else has the opportunity to do that, right? You know, it's just like laying your cards out, and that's a very powerful thing to do, honestly, you know, and I don't know, like it's just amazing that I just love that we're in an age where like such a beautiful thing is like being trans and not being ashamed of it is something that could be so like powerful and whatever, it's just kind of like put out to the public at large, you know?
And it was something, and I remember we were doing promo classes at the Nightmare Factory, and it was one of those days, typically like Cody Rhodes would kind of pull each person aside and we would do whatever the prompt was for the promo. And for the first one, it was like do like a 1 minute introductory promo of like who you are, what your character is, whatnot. And I was like leaning very heavily into like all the trans stuff. And they're like your promo is fine, but be like a wrestler who is trans, not like the trans wrestler. And like it just makes you think it's like, yeah, like I can like be a wrestler and like have all these like, whatever, like a gimmick or like have whatever like personalities and whatnot. And being trans is just a part of that. Like, and it's kind of opposite of what we were just talking about, where it's like, oh, I'm like being out and proud of like being trans and whatnot. But at the same time, it's like the knowledge that they gave me of like, you don't have to make being trans the only thing about you. Like, you can show other aspects of who you are,
Yes.
which was like an idea that I hadn't even thought of.
No, it is completely true. You know, like I know we talked a lot about like that being a very like front-facing thing, but it's part of the presentation of who you are in the ring. You know, it's part of who you are as a person, but it's not like fully encompassing of who you are as a person. There's a great quote from, I don't know, the Dark Side of the Ring just aired like their episode of Chris Colt like a few days after as we're recording here. And I wrote down this quote just for myself because I just absolutely loved it, but I feel like it fits so well into this like conversation. Like if so this is Jack Fritter, who is a pioneer in like queer media, specifically gay and like leather culture media. And talking about Chris Colt, like if you reduce people to one word, you miss the entire world of what they're really about. And like that is just such a monumental thing to think about in terms of not just like the emergence of LGBTQ people more so in recent years in the pro wrestling space, but just how these sort of identities have been characterized in pro wrestling and how the evolution of that has happened, right? Like even looking at like, because like I'm of the age where like Goldust was my like Billy and Chuck, right? Goldust was my like when I first started watching wrestling was like the one that was like made me start asking some questions about myself, sort of thing. And but like you know, obviously you look back on it now, like yes, there's a problematic element to all of that for sure. And especially how forward facing all of the like queer coded stuff was, but to watch how that the presentation of a character like that has changed over the last like 30, nearly 30 years now, to where like you have people talking about like you know yes this is a part of you but your character is not defined solely by their queerness, whereas like if you had gone to like a mainstream wrestling show like 20 years ago, you have Billy and Chuck. Their main defining trait is that they are like ambiguously gay.
And it was just like that was the character. You were the gay. Like, and you weren't used for your ability or for your personality. You were used as like a shock factor or like a cheap pop.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's just amazing to see how like even just the thought process around that has evolved and how it's grown and really been taken a hold of by a lot of people in this space from our community. You know, where like there's so many different diverse presentations of like queerness,
Oh,
everything
definitely.
from like even I always give Pero credit for this, even though he likes to call himself the first gay. like it's just it. Somebody like Pero, you like if you didn't somebody didn't tell you that he was gay or like you didn't know already, like you how would you even know, right?
And I mean, like, that's even like the thing, like the past, like, 2 years, because obviously, as I've come along in the business, I'm like meeting more people or becoming more aware of more talent. Because like I knew like some indie wrestler, but I didn't know like every indie wrestler. And so like I'm going through like the past 2 years of like QWI, and I was like, oh, I didn't know that this wrestler was in the community or this wrestler. And so it's like cool to figure out that it's like, yeah, like there are a lot of us out there, like more than people think, and that being queer isn't the only thing that people know about them.
Yes. And I will say some of my favorite things about doing the QWI list are when people are like, oh, I didn't know this person was that like part of the community. Like, you know, like I think the one person who like there's okay, so there's two DMs that I get that I have gotten the most in the years that I've done it. One is like I didn't know Speedball was part of the community. I'm like, well, You just read his Twitter bio. Come on.
Yeah, it's
And
in the bio.
exactly. It's not that. Come on, figure it out. And then two is like, why isn't Kenny Omega on this list? And I'm like, you motherfuckers.
I mean, as someone who Kenny Omega is like my favorite wrestler, I could be looking at you like,
I
why?
understand.
But I do understand.
I understand. No,
It's a very
but
subtle thing with Kenny Omega.
it's very, very subtle. And like, once he says something publicly, we'll see where he ranks.
Watch this interview come out now, and it's going to spur a whole conversation about Kenny Omega again.
I mean, I feel like that conversation gets spurred somewhere every day on the internet. I
All
think
the
the
time,
best
because
yeah.
they'll find the old clips of him and Ibushi,
Exactly.
and it'll restart everything, and then they'll go on a deep dive of like, oh, here's some like small thing he said on like a 2017 BTE episode. And
Yes, exactly. All right, y'all. Thank you so much for tuning in to LGBT in the Ring. I'm just gonna take a quick break here to let you know ways that you can support the show. And say thank you to some very rad people that help make this show as amazing as it is. First off, if you would like to support the show, we are on Patreon now, patreon.com/LGBTRingPod. Multiple tiers there for everyone that feels so moved to support this show. We've got numerous patron benefits over there, including bonus shows that are going to be coming out monthly, roundtable of those sort of things. So definitely go over and check us out. Again, patreon.com/LGBTRingPod. Every single dollar that is pledged there to support the show is very, very humbling, and we thank you. We also have a merch store over on Brainbuster Tees. Go to brainbustertees.com and search LGBT in the Ring. You get t-shirts, tank tops, all kinds of good stuff. And, always looking at some new things as well. But definitely check us out on Brainbuster Tees there as well. You can follow the show on social media as well. We're everywhere that we have accounts. We're at LGBT Ring Pod. That's Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, co-host, Mastodon, whatever. We're there. So follow the show there. You can follow me at WonderboyOTM on Twitter and Instagram as well. We also want to give a huge thank you to Sarah and the Safe Word for the show's theme, Formula 666 from the album Red Hot and Holy. You can find them on Twitter at STSW Band, or you can check out their music on both Spotify and Bandcamp. Another great way to support the show is over at independentwrestling.tv. Check out IWTV for the best in current and classic independent pro wrestling, including live events from top independent promotions worldwide. You can use our code LGBTRingPod or visit the URL tinyurl.com/IWTVLGBT. And whenever you, as long as you use that code to open your account and keep that active, we get a kickback from IWTV. So your subscription to watch all the great wrestling that we talk about on this show goes to support the show as well. Thumbs up there. Of course, if you want to read more of my pro wrestling writing, you can check out outsports.com. And if you are into video games, I also co-host a video game news Twitch stream every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. It's called the Mr. Video Game Super Show. I co-host that with two dear friends and Twitch streamers, Slacker Kite and Lady Merowyn. Just run through the week's gaming news, or we throw on a game and play and just have fun and be dumb. It's great. But you can check that out every Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at twitch.tv/deadsunentertainment. Sun like the star. With that said, let's get back to the show. That's actually a very funny kind of segue now into the next sort of conversation, because like I know that like Kenny Omega and Kazuchika Okada were like a huge part of bringing you kind of back to the wrestling space, and obviously training under someone like Cody, who was like in the midst of that sort of like era of New Japan and that whole like kind of renaissance stateside for the, for that company, there was an amazing thing to see. Like, how much did that play any part in like kind of pushing you to train there as well?
I don't like, I mean, it's definitely like cool when you think about it, but not really. The main thing that kind of drove me to get to there, other than like, oh, well, it's, Cody Rhodes is there and he's, awesome, was it was just kind of like location based, because it's like, with like having a day job and whatnot, I knew I was gonna have to find like a way to like accommodate like scheduling and everything. And it just happened to, before they relocated to their current building, it was like 45 minutes from my job, whereas like all the other ones were like at least 2 hours away. And so that was honestly the main factor.
I can understand that, especially like living in the Atlanta area. It's all about proximity.
Yeah,
Like,
and traffic is no joke.
God, who wants to drive anywhere for 2 hours in Atlanta?
No.
Come on.
It's the joke where it's like Atlanta is an hour away from Atlanta.
Yes. God. So one thing that I've really liked about like your career so far, since you started in 2022, was just two things. One, the places you've been, because you've been all over. I would say you've been in more states than I would expect someone in like their first full year of wrestling to hit, personally. And two, all of these like sort of historic matches that you've had very early on in your career so far. You know, obviously looking at the matches that you've had with Sacred Daughter of Tyr at TWE and at Pro South, you know, the first matches between two trans women in the state of Tennessee and the state of Alabama, you stepping into the ring with Andy Ripley in Georgia, like making that same mark there for the state of Georgia. And even beyond yourself, like seeing people like Gauzy and Sigrid do like achieve a similar thing in North Carolina, like it's just, as someone who was born and raised in Georgia in the South and like understands like sort of the attitudes of the queer community in the Atlanta area and towards the queer community in Atlanta and the surrounding areas, like how amazing is it to you that you've, not just you, but like this like kind of like burgeoning population of, you know, trans and non-binary performers in the Southeast are like already like making these like huge historic marks for yourselves so early into your careers in that way.
I mean, hey, someone had to be the first. Someone had to do it.
It's very true.
But I don't know. Like I, like, cause like I obviously like I talk with Secret all the time. Like, yeah, we've had several matches together, but like at the end of the day, like we're friends, and just the thought of like, we live in a place where, for the most part, being who we are and identifying the way that we do is not, it's not okay. And I mean, I like Metro Atlanta is, not bad. And like I don't really have any issues like my daily life and whatnot with being trans, but like, being in this industry that, as we've said, like it's still kind of, growing in regards to representation. And knowing that like we were like some of the first people to have those matches in these places that it's not, typical for that to happen, like it's kind of mind-blowing. And like I didn't even think about it. I'm pretty sure you were like who pointed out the fact that it was like the first one, like when me and her had our like Tennessee match last year, which that was only, it was like her secret second match ever and my like 12th match or something, like it was somewhere around there. So we were both like very early on. And I'm pretty sure you were the person who pointed out that it was like the first time that it had happened in the Southeast. And like at the time, I didn't even think about that because, like, there's all sorts of queer talent around here. You had your AC Max and your Rico Gonzalez and, Dylan McQueen and so many people. And then, like, Kid Bandit did, training down here and whatnot. And to think, like, wow, this was the first time that two trans people had a match like in the Southeast. Like it, like I still can't even put it in the words. It's crazy. And like I know that like on the grand scale of things, it's not like this crazy huge accomplishment. I mean, it's not like, oh, two trans people main eventing WrestleMania or something, but like it's still something that like I can kind of look back on and be like, yeah, we were the first, and hopefully we're not the last.
I mean, granted, some of the seeing the people that are coming out of like that area right now, and seeing the attention that y'all are getting too, I have a lot of confidence y'all aren't going to be the last. You
I
know,
hope so.
just to hear people like Billy Dixon and Effie continually point out like you and like Con O'Kelly and Ida Monroe and Sigrid, basically anybody that was in that Big Gay Brunch scramble that you were in. Along with like people like Finesse and people like Gazi and like it's just amazing. I don't know, there's just a very special place in like my heart personally for like someone who like grew up in that area to like see that like I would never have thought the Southeast was going to be like on like the trending edge of like of trans and non-binary individuals coming into the pro wrestling space and just kicking down the fucking doors like y'all have.
Hey, somebody's got to do it. That's all I can say. Somebody's got to do it, and if it ends up being me or Sigrid or whoever, then hell, why not?
How does it land with you whenever people like Effie and Billy, like these like people that are huge in the LGBTQ pro wrestling movement, like point to the Southeast as like the place to keep people's eyes on for
Yeah,
the queer
it's
community?
honestly crazy because like I know he's like come on this podcast before and like he's like mentioned like me and Sigrid and Eden like by name, and it's just like I never thought that I was gonna be this like, I mean obviously like I keep saying I'm like the future of queer wrestling and I want to be like, at that like dark chic and Effie level and whatnot. But like at the end of the day, like when you're starting out, like you never think that you're gonna be this person who is like out here, doing any sort of groundbreaking stuff or out here, having these historic moments. And then to hear these people who are so established and are so respected and have done so much of that, like paving the road, mention you by name. It's like I keep saying that it's like mind blowing and whatnot, but it is like I don't like even then, like I still don't know how to feel about it. It's really crazy.
And to a similar end, like you've ended up getting to share locker rooms and spaces with a lot of other like outstanding, trans individuals that are in the pro wrestling space that are doing great things as well. That we talked about, Sheik a little bit before. We talked about Jamie Senegal before. Going out to Denver for Primos with, Joan Jetson's big queer launch. Like Joan, someone who really what popped onto like I think the larger radar a couple of years back, and to see like her shows that she runs with Primos there continuing to do great things, going out to Beyond, like that obviously a huge opportunity there for you, and like I don't know, like it's just how do those interactions, maybe not interactions, but like how do those opportunities like land with you so early in your career?
I mean, like, I can't really take like all sorts of credit where it's like, oh, they like reached out to me because of my amazing athletic ability or anything. Like the Big Queer Launch Joan Jett's an opportunity, which, like, I love Joan Jett to death. She is amazing, and that show was such a fun experience. But like that was just the case of like I had someone who knew her vouch for me. And it's like I wasn't anything special. I'm still nothing special, but like they were like, hey, I know this person who's running like a queer wrestling show. Hit them up. Tell them that I told them to hit you up. And it just kind of became a thing from there. And then like, you mentioned Beyond, and that was just a case of they put out a post saying that they were looking for female talent. And I'm like, I'm a female talent. Hi, how's it going? And it was just it's never like any of those haven't been these like moments of like, oh, they're like personally reaching out to me. I just kind of like luck into some of these situations, but I've enjoyed every single one of them. And it's like I try and look at each one as this just like once in a lifetime experience, because like I don't know if I'll ever be back at a show in Colorado or Massachusetts or whatever, which I mean obviously like I would like to, but I try and just like take those things like as they come and just be like I'm just gonna soak in this whole experience, this whole event, and just like cherish it, because I know that not everybody gets these opportunities, and like I'm fortunate and thankful that I have.
Now, I think that's one of the aspects that I've, especially doing this show, that I've like learned from countless people that I've spoken to, is like the opportunities are always like great to have, but it's really like what you pull away from the full experience of like being in these places, like seeing new states, seeing new cities, and interacting with the people from those regions, that are there. And obviously you're there to wrestle and to great and to like advance like your career and everything like that, but there's so much more that you take away from the experiences that are around pro wrestling. And I don't know, like that just it sounds like those are things that really resonate with you as well.
Yeah, and then like obviously doing, the Big Gay Thanksgiving, which I just kind of like happened to, it was another one of those things where I lucked into. Like I had met Effie at the Joan Jett and Big Queer Launch event, and that was like, I think I had met him there, and then I think I saw him backstage at the GCW versus or. It's one of the GCW shows in Alabama. I don't remember if it was the one with New South or just a straight up one in Huntsville. But like other than that, I had never really had a whole lot of interactions with him. And I just like hit him up. I'm like, hey, like, if you like need anyone, I saw you were doing a battle royal. Like, if you need anyone, let me know. And then it just kind of like snowballed from there. And then doing that show led to me getting on the, Big Gay Brunch Tampa show. And it's just like obviously those shows we mentioned before were great, but doing a show like the Big Gay Brunch shows that are so iconic and that so many people watch and so many people like look back on it, like I was in tears like the entire day of Tampa, like I was crying backstage before the match.
Any particular reason why?
It's just the overwhelmingness of it, like knowing that like one, it's gonna be it's the largest promotion I'd ever worked for, because like GCW is massive. It was the largest really show that I'd ever like crowd wise and like just like event wise, and then to be around all of these people who are next level performers, whether it's the queer performers like Effie and Sheik and all of them, or even just people like Nick Gage and people like that. It's just like it was so mind-blowing that I was even there at the event, let alone wrestling on it, let alone winning. Like And I was just like, I was so just overwhelmed with emotions backstage, thinking like, how is like, once again, how is this my life? Like, how did I get to this point? Especially like, you know, with like this little amount of time, this little amount of experience. And it was like, I literally, and I said this in another interview, like Nick Gage literally had to like come up and like calm me down because I was just so much of a mess. And I was like, it's okay, it's okay. And he was like, calm down, you know, it's just a show. Like, just, you know, you go out there, you do you. Like, you know, if you weren't supposed to be here, you wouldn't be here, and stuff like that. So it was just like, it was just such an overwhelming experience.
How validating was it to hear from like Nick Gage, like tell you like, you're on this show for a reason in so many words?
Yeah, it's funny because like I look back, I did a I went to a GCW show, like it was probably like 6 months before I started training, and I did a meet and greet with Nick Gage, and at that time I was probably like 30 pounds heavier than I am now, and I wasn't even thinking about signing up for wrestling school yet, and then to go to being on the show where he's not only at, but he's doing commentary for a match of mine, and he's like saying my name like on commentary. It's so cool. Like it's I'm speechless even sitting here now thinking about it, and that happened, you know, 3 or 4 months ago.
I mean, it's a all these sort of like full circle moments like carry a lot of weight, you know, like and it's one of those things that wrestling provides to the people that stay in it in really interesting ways. And like I don't know, like I've always heard that like the big gay brunch locker rooms are like some of like the most positive, most like, you know, affirming spaces that pro wrestling can provide. And
Hundred
you know,
percent.
yeah.
I will agree. It is without a doubt, you know, that Tampa locker room. Because like not only like, yeah, it's all these, you know, amazing queer talent, but there were so many amazing queer talent from the South, you know, whether it was, you know, like a Sawyer Wreck, a Lindsay Snow, any of the people that were in the Scramble, the Creeps, like, you know, so many people that, and then like Rico Gonzalez, AZ Mac, they were all there, and people that like I had slowly met through my time in wrestling, and we were just all there together at the same time. It was amazing. It's just amazing. It's all I can say. It's without a doubt the best like locker room environment I've ever been in. So kudos to Effie for cultivating said locker room environment.
Yes. Another thing to give kudos to Appy for
Yeah.
sure. I don't know, it's just I've really enjoyed like watching your progression and your journey, honestly. And the region as a whole too, you know, for our community there. And like it's made me kind of, I'm not gonna lie, being out on the West Coast, like I enjoy where I am now. I do feel a little bit of FOMO. Like
Right.
where like
See, and I'm in the opposite boat where it's like, yeah, I can look at it as a whole and like appreciate like the, you know, the progress that has been made in this region. But at the same time, I'm like, there's a lot of times I just wish I wasn't in Georgia.
I feel you. Trust me.
But I can't leave now. I still haven't stolen the big chicken.
Yes, exactly. We need to talk about this because you mentioned this to me in DMs about your grand heist of the big chicken, or at least your
Yes.
plans for a grand heist of the big chicken, which for listeners that don't know what the big chicken is, I'll give if you would like to describe what the big chicken is, Soraya, please go ahead.
It's just this like landmark in Cobb County, and what it is there's a KFC, a Kentucky Fried Chicken restaurant, and on top of the restaurant is this like giant, like several story tall red chicken, and it has like a moving eye and like a moving beak, And I always used to joke with an ex of mine. I'm like, I'm gonna steal the big chicken someday. Like, if I ever get arrested and I'm on the news, it's gonna be because I stole the big chicken. And I would always joke because there is the Dobbins Air Force Base is like right, it's like right across the street. And so I'd always like, all right, I'm gonna like, sneak onto the Air Force Base. I'm gonna steal a giant plane, and then I'm gonna use that to like fly over the chicken and like snatch it up, and then I'm just gonna have the giant chicken, and it'll be a conversational piece within my apartment.
Well, you could basically, that could be your apartment, honestly.
Honestly, yeah, I don't know like how hollow it is. Maybe I could like build a tiny house inside of it.
Potentially. There are ways to mod this thing, right?
Yeah, 100%. But like, just imagine the thought of like, I'm gonna host a dinner party and person comes over and there's just this giant like 10 story tall red wooden chicken just at your home. It's the perfect crime.
Exactly. And one that I wholeheartedly support.
Yeah, like
Given
who would be against someone like just kidnapping the big chicken from the KFC?
I can assure you all of my friends back at Cobb County would agree.
I'll turn it into like a bed and breakfast or something, or like an Airbnb.
Yes.
I'd make
Oh,
a
that
killing.
would, yes, that would do very well on Airbnb. I would look, I would book to sleep in the big chicken,
Right?
personally. Yes.
It'd be amazing. It'd be booked up for months and it'd be awesome.
Soraya, we start to wind down here a little bit. I had one more question for you. Obviously, Dragon Ball Z, huge inspiration for you, right?
Yes.
We see it in the res in the gear, we see it in like in the name. We see it, on your timelines. It's there. How dope for you as someone who is like such a big fan of Dragon Ball Z, and because of that, I'm assuming you are also a fan of other anime as well. Yeah, to an extent, right?
Yeah, but
How
it's the
awesome!
main one.
Of course, everybody has their main.
Yeah.
How awesome was it for you to wrestle at MomoCon?
So I really wish that I could have done like some sort of like cosplay-esque like attire for that. Because like Brooke Havoc was on the show and she was dressed as Android 18. Which was like, I'm like, dang, I wish I could have like thought ahead to like, get some like sort of special like gear or special like entrance, whatever made for that. But that was honestly such a cool show that like I'm kind of sad because like Zicky Dice has said it before that like a lot of the footage for that show got lost. And so I don't know if like my matches from that will ever even like see the light of day. But we had so many people there, and it was like these people aren't even like gonna be go-to wrestling fans. They're just like people who were there for the con who walk by and see this wrestling ring and see these people doing these moves, and are like, oh, I'm gonna like stick around for this. And I remember it was either between shows or is before the show where the ring was set up was right next to where all of the like autograph, guest lines were. And the person I wanted to see more than anyone there was Janet Varney, who does the voice of Korra in The Legend of Korra, part of the After the Last Airbender universe. And I went up and I was in my wrestling gear. And she like asked me about it. I was like, oh yeah, we're like doing a wrestling show like on the other side of the curtain there. And she's like, oh, that's so cool. Like I should totally like tell Jack DeSena, who does the voice of Sokka and Avatar, like, 'cause he's like a wrestling fan, which I didn't know he was a wrestling fan, but like I've watched him do like interviews since or like before where he's like, oh yeah, I got like tickets for like Double or Nothing. And I'm like, it's cool when you find out that these like people in these like fandoms that you like are like intersect with other fandoms that you have. And so I was like, Oh yeah, like that would be like so cool if y'all came and watched, which like they had a panel, so obviously they didn't have time to come watch our wrestling show, but it was like to get to meet these like really cool voice actors in my wrestling gear and explain that I was a wrestler and then go and wrestle in front of like hundreds, if not like 1,000 people. Like we had a lot of people there for every single show. It was honestly one of the like most fun experiences I've had.
It definitely seemed like it from like the small like snippets of footage that got out there on social media from the show. Like it seemed like you that was a really interesting and exciting sort of environment to have a wrestling show in.
There's a lot of the matches on Zicky Dice's YouTube. But I mean, we did two shows a day for 3 days, and not even half of those matches are up. So, like, obviously, like, losing all that footage is kind of sad. But, like, I guess, like, in my mind, I can just try and, like, think of it like this is my special little thing that I did. And hopefully, I've already reached out to him about, like, possibly doing it again this year. So we'll see. But that was one of the coolest shows I've ever done. I just wish that I would have like prepped some sort of cooler like cosplay-esque moments in it. I remember I did the one of the matches I did on Sunday. It wasn't even a very good one, but I did a Hadouken in the match just because I was like,
Why wouldn't you?
I'm like, I just want to do it. And it's like I wasn't even like doing any sort of like Street Fighter like esque things. I just like randomly in the match was just like Hadouken to my opponent and they like flew out of the ring and I was like, this is just I'm just having fun.
That's the whole point of it, right?
Yeah.
To
Which
have
like
fun.
in the grand scheme of things, I probably should have made it more of like a Dragon Ball Z thing, but like my mind went to the Hadouken first and it's probably because Kenny Omega used to do the Hadouken in matches, but like it was just fun. And hopefully I get to do it again.
I hope you do too. Like I would love to go to a wrestling show at an anime convention personally. I feel like that's just an environment that I need to experience
And it's
personally.
crazy that like a lot of conventions do these things. Like, you know, obviously, you know, Momocon does it and Dragon Con does it, which are they're like the two bigger ones in Atlanta. There's a in Alabama, there's one's Comic Con and they do wrestling shows, and there's like a gaming expo in a couple months here in I think it's in Marietta, and they're gonna have a wrestling show. So like it's cool that it's like it's becoming this like common thing that there's like wrestling shows at these events, and you get to see like the wrestlers kind of show their nerdy side of things. Like I saw people doing like Naruto runs around the ring, or like one person, I'm pretty sure it's a wrestler by the name of Stunt Marshall, and I'm pretty sure he had this like Goku like Super Saiyan wig and he had like hid it under the ring, and then at one point he like pulls it out, puts it on, and starts running wild, and it was we were just having fun.
I need to see Stunt Marshall in a fucking Super Saiyan wig now. I just
I
need a
wish I could
picture of
find it.
that.
Maybe I can like hit him up and see if he has any clips of it.
Yes. Just like Stunt Marshall's already a character.
Yeah.
Like just
But
and
yeah,
that just put it on top.
I'm pretty sure it was him and he had this like big like super puffy like blonde wig and he like put it on and started running wild and it was a good time.
It certainly sounds like it, and I do hope that you get the chance to do that again for sure. And I've been to wrestling shows at like street fairs and stuff like that, with the whole queer and stuff like that, and like those environments are so electric. I can only imagine what being in that type of environment would be
Oh,
like for that
it
too.
was so much fun.
Yeah. Well, Soraya, thank you so much for coming on the show this time
Yeah, thanks
around.
for having me.
Of course, definitely
And
won't be the last time.
all of my rambling nonsense where I can't put words together because I don't know how to use the English language.
You've listened to the show. You know that we are no stranger or enemy to a tangent. All right.
Okay, I'm like slowly teaching myself sign language, so I'll just burst like the little bit of that I know and then just like pretend that I don't know how to speak or something because I'm so bad at putting it sentences together.
You're totally fine here. We welcome that, honestly.
Cool beans.
Well, let everybody know where they can find you online.
So see, I always forget this because like I don't have like the whole like all of them are the same thing. So my Twitter, because nobody calls it X, we all call it Twitter, is just at Soraya Saber. And it's the main thing I use, but I do have an Instagram and it is it's underscore Saber underscore time. So yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, Sarai.
Yeah, thank you. It's fun.
My thanks once again to Soraya for taking the time to come on the show and chat all about her experiences so far in the pro wrestling space. Just a treat, always a treat. I'm sure that we will connect on the show again down the line. Just awesome stuff there. Really enjoyed getting the chance to know her a little bit better and finally hearing about all these big chicken heist ideas, which again, I 100% support. Turn the big chicken into an apartment, please. That being said, though, that's all for us this week here on the show. Come back next week. We'll have another fun episode in store for all of y'all. But of course, before we get out of here, I do want to talk a little bit about our Patreon, patreon.com/LGBTRingPod. Obviously, if you want to support the show, that is a very positive way to do so. You can go over and join the roster of lovelies at the $3 tier and have your name counted among the ranks of the lovelies that get shouted out on this show every week. Names like Val Capone, Alex E., Jerry Legend and Zach Walker. At the $5 tier, you unlock all of our bonus monthly shows, every episode of Required Reading that we've done, which we're coming close to a year of episodes of Required Reading. Really fun show that we do where we take pro wrestling and film and put them in conversation with one another. With my good friend Hollis, who's been on this show in the past. It's just a really, really fun project that we've really sunk our teeth into over the last dear year. So, of course, if you can't support financially, I completely understand. I've been there. I totally get it. Word of mouth, rating and reviewing on your podcast platform of choice, and just continuing to spread the word organically about the show always helps as well, and it is greatly, greatly appreciated. Trust me, anything done to support the show is greatly appreciated, for real. It's never lost on me. Never, ever, ever. Well, I think with that being said, we can say goodbye for this week. But of course, we'll be back again. But until then, y'all stay messy, wash your hands, wear your mask, get vaccinated and boosted if at all possible. Congratulations to the Backslide Girls and stand with Nyla Rose. Bye.
She made a deal.